B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. Again, I hope this podcast finds you all safe, healthy, and either playing or missing golf more than ever. On this week's show, we're going to cover both sides, I believe. First up, legendary swing instructor, the czar of the Konica Minolta Swing Vision on CBS for years, Peter Kostis joins us to talk about where we are now with the game you and I play, the pro game, whether or not it should come back, when and what it will look like on TV. Then, well, this week is what would have been Wells Fargo Championship Week here in Charlotte at Quail Hollow Club. We'll give you a portion of defending champion Max Homa's teleconference from this week and hear from Gary Soba, tournament director as well. But we begin with Peter Kostis. You know, there's so much that I want to get to, but let's start with the obvious. I know that you've battled cancer in recent years, and as you and I are just slightly, and I mean ever so slightly, past the age of 29, you definitely fall into that at-risk category for COVID-19. How are you doing, and how are things in Arizona where you are?
Well, as far as I know, I'm doing great. Golf courses are still open here, thankfully, so I can maintain my sanity. Other than that, we're staying home a lot. And Arizona's doing pretty well. I think our cases are down significantly from what was projected originally. So all in all, pretty good here.
Yeah, we're kind of in the same boat here in North Carolina. Let's talk about golf where you are as we're recording this. You're teaching in an hour. Now, are you doing this in a manner to which we're all familiar with in person, or are you doing this remotely?
I'm doing it in person, but, and I've learned this the hard way, teaching from 6 feet away is really hard to do.
Yes.
I'm a hands-on person. I get in there and change grips and turn shoulders and turn hips and stuff like that. But when you can't do that, and you have to do it verbally from 6 feet away or demonstrate from 6 feet away, it presents a challenge, but we're doing it.
Yeah, I just have the old images, the black and white images of Jack Grout grabbing Nicklaus by the buzz cut and holding his head in place. And, couldn't do that in a current environment.
No, unfortunately, you can't. But you know what? It's what's the old phrase? Don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
There you go.
So the lesson may not be perfect, but it's pretty good.
Now, is it possible, Peter, because I'm sure someone's going to try it, is it possible to effectively coach remotely? I mean, I'm having trouble thinking that you can pick up all the nuances of a golf swing on a flat screen when you're not witnessing it in person in 3D.
Well, yes, you're 100% right. It depends on the quality of the video. It depends on the angles of the camera and whether you have live communication back and forth, where you can zoom in on the person's grip or get to the finer points, finer details. Because generally speaking, video teaching deals with effects that you can easily see rather than the underlying root causes that are sometimes more difficult to see.
You and I had sort of gone back and forth via text as to the different things we wanted to talk about, what golf has done and what golf needs to continue to do moving forward. Let me share with you a couple of things we're doing here, and let's compare notes. These notes are from the club that I play at. We've placed small pieces of foam pool noodles on the flags to prevent the balls from going in the hole. This will remove any opportunity of reaching into the cup and touching flag sticks. In essence, it looks like bumpers at a bowling alley. All bumper rakes have been removed from the golf course. If your ball lands in a sand bunker, you may place the ball with your hand and play from there. Please try to smooth the area with your feet as much as possible. All water coolers have been removed. All ball washers and sand buckets have been removed. All tees and tee containers have been removed. All items from the golf carts have been removed, such as towels, teas, sand bottles, and coolers. The snack bar has coolers available for those wishing to purchase drinks while on the golf course. After the round, please leave the cooler with the golf cart so we can clean and sanitize them. Golf carts are being cleaned and wiped down thoroughly after each use. All pencils and scorecards are being discarded after each round, whether or not they were used. We are restricting the riding of carts to one person per cart, with the exception of those living in the same household if they wish to ride together. Those are a list of things that we've done to try to keep golf open and keep golf safe for us. Does that sound sort of what's on par with what's going down in Arizona?
Virtually identical. I belong to a couple different clubs here, and one of them, for example, you could only carry your own bag, but they had no carts. And they just recently, I think this past Thursday, they put carts in play. Again, single riders unless you're from the same family. But, yeah, that's the rules that we're playing by right now. And you know what? I went out. I carried my bag a weekend ago. I went out and played with my wife yesterday. And it's a different kind of fun. I don't know if it's just de-stressing from the everyday stress that we're living under right now, but it was really enjoyable. And I think golf is a great respite from the everyday pressures that we're facing right now, provided you just do it correctly.
I agree, and I've done it both ways, where we're riding in a cart, but I'm walking more than I've walked in quite a while. And I think that walking, you talk about it being a respite from what we're going through. I really think walking is almost integral to that respite experience, because it just gives you more time just to inhale, exhale, look around, smell the flowers, if you will. And I just find the game more enjoyable when you've got a group of four guys walking as opposed to riding carts. And there's something about the throwback experience of not having rakes in the bunkers that makes you feel like you're in some old Tom Morris situation where a hazard was truly a hazard. And even the pool noodles, I thought that would offend my sensibilities, but there's something kind of fun about that. And when all this is over, we're either going to be some really effective aggressive putters or some disastrous aggressive putters because of these pool noodles. But either way, I find it really, really enjoyable as well.
Well, you know, our pool noodles are recessed an inch below the cup. So the ball still has to go in the hole, but it doesn't go to the bottom, and you can reach in and grab the ball with two fingers and not touch anything. So I think we're a little bit more in tune with actually having to try and make a putt. Plus, I think we're also we're putting a 3-foot putt in play. If you get it inside a 3-foot area, it's considered good, so you don't have to worry about touching the flag stick or any of those things.
The great Peter Costas, legendary swing instructor and broadcaster, is our guest taking Dead Aim. What sorts of things can we expect to see once tournament golf resumes in terms of on-course safety for players and caddies? Let's cover that first. Just what sort of changes in the way things are done operationally on a course can we expect to see, do you think?
Well, I think the tour has already stated their planning, should they start up again at Colonial, fan-free zones.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a given. There's not going to be any people.
Yeah, but that said, this worries me a bit, Charlie, because, you know, we got 17,000 golf courses in America, roughly speaking, and roughly half of them are closed right now because someone in a position of power thinks that golf is a non-essential business that is conducive to transmitting the virus back and forth. And if the tour goes back and plays, we have to understand the tour is not golf.
Right.
The tour is professional golf, and real golf is your club and my club and the munis and the public facilities and where people actually pay to play, not get paid to play. And so I think golf and the golf industry is extremely vital to America in particular. And I would hate for anything to go wrong at a PGA Tour event. God forbid a player gets sick or a volunteer and somebody heaven forbid, dies. Those people in a position of power who already have closed golf courses are going to say, see, I told you so. Golf isn't safe. Well, that's not really golf. Golf is carrying your bag, staying apart from people, foam noodles in the stuff that we're doing right now, right? Mm-hmm. So I really am scared that something might go wrong, could go wrong. Only takes one person at a PGA Tour event for governors to start closing down golf courses countrywide, and that would be absolutely devastating, in my opinion.
Do you see a situation? I was sort of envisioning what sort of things they could do to minimize exposure and touching of objects and whatnot. Do you see something like a designated bunker raker on every hole? Do you see something, a designated flag person on every hole, where the only person who touches a flagstick is someone who's there with a gloved hand, and then after they take the ball out of the hole, the ball is immediately, you know, washed it with a Lysol wipe or something? Do you see that sort of thing happening?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. But the reality is, my fear isn't on the golf course. They're going to have testing. And my fear is that golf has a difficult enough image in the world right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so do you want to get on an airplane to go play golf? Do you want to stay in a hotel right now to play golf? Do you want to eat in restaurants to play golf? That's my fear, is the stuff off the golf course that gets one of the guys on the golf course sick. And then, of course, it could spread by touching the flagstick or wherever. Plus, I think the tour has already gone on record as saying they're going to need something like a million tests to run the tour from June through September. And that being the case, you don't want to have people's perception being that we're taking tests away from frontline workers or potentially sick people in order to play golf, right? So you got to test all the caddies. You got to test all the players. And you got to test them like every other day. Just because you test me today doesn't mean I can't get sick on Thursday.
Right.
So the testing has to be continual and constant. And unless we come up with a way of doing it that doesn't impact the rest of the country, I think it's bad for golf's image to get back too soon. I think it's better for golf's image to get back too late.
Peter Costas is our guest, Taking Dead Aim. Peter, my father told me when I was very young that the answer to just about every question I will have as an adult is follow the money. In my mind, there is no question, zero question, that the first live sport back will have unreal ratings. I don't care what it is. And if golf is able to do that and sell to advertisers, hey, we're the only game in town right now that's doing it live, this could be some serious money we're talking about, and it leads me to this question. How fine a line is there between the tour, being concerned with safety and being concerned with these revenues?
Well, that's a microcosm of what the president's dealing with right now and all the governors, right? I mean, it's the conflict between can we afford to keep the economy shut down, or can we afford to risk losing another life? I mean, that's a really delicate and dangerous conversation. But it has to happen, I think, at some point in time. But doing it on a national basis versus doing it in the game of golf, I think poses different questions. You know, if a football player gets sick in the NFL because he contracts the virus, you know, during a game or whatever, there's no people out playing football to speak of.
Right.
High schools are going to be shut down. Colleges are going to be shut down. Whatever. I mean, but the game of golf is an industry unto itself, and if our professionals get that industry shut down, that can have devastating consequences.
In all practical application, though, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I agree to a certain extent, but this virus is not going away, and it's always going to be with us, just like, and I'm not comparing the two, but just to throw this out, the flu is always with us. There's not going to be a cure, so to speak. Do you really think that it would shut down if one player tested positive? I mean, at some point, don't you have to just say, look, it is what it is. There's going to be some people that are going to test positive. That's just the way the world is going to work, and we have to sort of accept that, just as you would accept once people start to go back to work on a daily basis, that just the proliferation of people coming out of their caves, you're going to have people that are testing positive, and it's just sort of finding a way to live with that.
Oh, I agree 1,000%. I've said this for a few weeks now that, you know, if doctors could somehow identify the mechanism of this virus that kills people and give me a pill, a shot, some sort of way of mitigating dying, I'm willing to get sick to go back to a normal life. I'm just not willing to roll the dice and die to go back to a normal life right now. Because, you know, having at my age and having survived cancer, you know, I'm in that high risk category, right? So it becomes a personal issue. And what I was saying was, no, I think golf should go on. I think the tour should back when it's safe to get back. But those governors and those mayors, those people who don't like golf, are going to use any excuse possible to keep it shut down in this environment, I believe. And so that's what I would hate to see happen. I would love nothing more than the PGA Tour to come back and play. I mean, we've done tournaments in the past. We did it in Washington a few years ago with no fans. We did it in San Diego a couple of years ago with no fans because of weather and safety issues with trees having fallen down and so on and so forth. It was a different environment, but it was okay. It was successful.
Oh, yeah. Look, the last time that I talked with you in person was here when the PGA was held at Quail, and we had an awful, awful thunderstorm on round two on a Friday, and they cleared all the patrons out. And when the players came back on the course, it was just the media and the players, and it was a major championship. And I'm looking around going, this is surreal. This is a major, and it looks like these guys are just playing with their buddies at a member right now.
Yeah, it's a different – I mean, I was walking with Tiger Woods at Congressional, and we had the Secretary of the Army walking with me. He wanted to be out there, and there was maybe 50 people following Tiger's route, maybe, because they let a few members out there. And it was weird, in a word.
Yeah, Tiger hadn't played in front of just 50 people since he was a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, maybe earlier than that.
How great is it to hear from Peter Costas? And when we return, he takes dead aim at golf's return to TV and more, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, continuing now with legendary swing coach and broadcaster Peter Costas. And it's the broadcaster I want to talk to now. In a couple of weeks, we've got The Match coming up with Tiger, Phil, Manning, and Brady. I sort of see this as kind of a litmus test as far as the logistics of broadcasting golf in this new environment. You have said that you don't see how it can be televised safely. Is that just the concerns you've already expressed, or do you not think that television can do this?
Well, no. When I said that, I don't think it can be done as we know it safely. You can't pack 60 people into a production truck and maintain social distancing.
Right. I don't think people realize what goes into televising just a regular tour event. I get to see you guys out here at Quail every year for the Wells Fargo, and literally CBS has a compound out here.
Yeah, and you can't – so doing television the way we've always done it can't be done in a socially acceptable manner right now. Now, you can do a stripped-down version, and I think as we've seen with the NFL draft and so on, I think the announcers can stay home and call the play-by-play from home. There's a lot of different things that are going to have to be in place to be able to put it on. Probably 30 or 40 technicians is the fewest you could go with to cover a tournament, but and fewer cameras. It'll be stripped down to be sure, but it can be done. It's not the way we're used to seeing it done. Now, will people accept that? Well, if they're thirsty enough for live sports, they're going to accept it.
Will we see a cut down in number of cameras, do you think? Will there be, in other words, you won't have, you know, people don't actually see what goes on with every tournament outside of the Masters. But inside the ropes, there is a huge contingent of people walking down the fairway. You've got people carrying mic booms. You've got camera people. You've got the tournament people, the standard bearers and whatnot, which will be non-existent because there's no fans. You don't need to inform anybody. You've got guys like you walking the fairways. What sort of cut down in that do you see?
A lot. I see fixed cameras being put on tees, wide angle, fixed cameras at the green, fewer walking cameras, and again, remote announcing, maybe one announcer on site to be able to do interviews if required, maybe not even that, but it's going to be... It's going to be different than we've ever seen before. It's going to be really retro and kind of low-tech, I guess is what I would call it.
So, in other words, go to the Masters website or YouTube and look up those Masters reels from 1957, 58, 59, and 60. Only picture it in high def, and that's kind of like what we're going to get?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to put ropes up for fans. There's not going to be any fans. But there's so many different ramifications when you look at this, Charlie. Example, how does the U.S. Tour start up without golf starting on all tours? You can't have world ranking points unless everybody's playing. And if you can't have world ranking points, like them or not, that's the way the majority of players get paid their bonuses from their sponsors. So it's completely unfair to expect the world ranking points to exist with only the U.S. Tour playing. Do you do shot length? Do you maintain the statistics that you live by? I mean, there's so many other things other than can they just go out and play and can we put it on television? There's a lot to consider here.
Peter Kostas is our guest taking Dead Aim. In your opinion, and you and I are just spitballing all of this stuff here, when and how do you think live fans return to PGA events?
Well, that's a good question. Like I said, we have to have some sort of universal testing or some sort of therapeutic that mitigates the percentage of people dying from this thing. Like I said, I'm willing to get sick to go back to a normal life. I'm not willing to risk my life to go back to a normal life. So if there's something to be done, but the vaccine obviously is the end all. If we get that vaccine in 18 months, then we can be back to living a fairly normal existence. But until then, I think it's going to be really, really difficult. I mean, I see no way of having a Ryder Cup with 40,000 fans following four groups.
Thank you so very much for bringing that up, because that's where I was going to next. On the calendar right now, whether it happens or not, but on the calendar right now, I can see a U.S. Open without fans. I can see, because I watched it here at Quail Hollow, I can see a PGA Championship without fans. There are two events on the calendar that I absolutely cannot see without fans, and I don't want to see without fans. One is the Ryder Cup. You can't have a Ryder Cup without that partisan crowd. You just can't. It ruins the event to me. And certainly, and we'll get into this more in just a second, spending all the time I have out at Augusta National, the Masters without the roars is not the Masters.
Well, I'll play advocate then devil's advocate.
Okay.
Okay. There are some people advocating that a fanless Ryder Cup would be good to reboot the Ryder Cup because it's gotten over the top the last few years. It's gotten a little bit angry and not just spirited competition and so on. And so they think that maybe coming back and playing the Ryder Cup and letting the golf speak for itself, and not the abusive fans, you know, yelling obscenities or whatever, cheering at that job. Maybe that could help reset the Ryder Cup. Devil's advocate says, not a chance. Because the fans are what make the Ryder Cup. The players are who play in the Ryder Cup, but the fans make it. You know, so I can see both sides of the equation. I really can. And as far as Augusta's concerned, you know, Augusta has so many rules, and it's so different. But I can see them playing without any patrons. I'm almost going to say fans.
I can't imagine. You know, even on television, you hear them. Now, it's not like when you're in person. In person, you really get an idea about what a roar at Augusta is, and they are unique. I remember there was a Nicklaus roar. There is certainly a Tiger roar. There's a birdie roar. There's an eagle roar. They all have their own separate sound. And even on TV, it kind of comes through. It would just be bizarre to know that Tiger Woods is making a charge somewhere and there's no roar. It just would be weird to me.
I think what you're going to find out in this transition, this temporary new normal that we have, Charlie, is that all sports, you know, you realize just how integral to the enjoyment the sport is to watch are the fans. You know, whether it's the basketball fans standing up when a guy's at the free throw line, or when the kicker is about to kick a field goal, or whatever the case may be, you realize how integral the fan experience is to the viewer's experience of watching that sport. You know, maybe only in bowling is you know. But, I mean, really, the fans make the sport in lots of cases, in my opinion. I mean, the participants are the sport, right? But the fans are what make it enjoyable to watch or not enjoyable to watch.
The great Peter Costas, swing coach and broadcaster, our guest taking Dead Aim. Get you out of here talking just a little bit about Augusta. You mentioned patrons a minute ago. You almost said fans. And I have had this question for a while and was looking at old Masters sanctioned reels of highlights. And when did the nomenclature really get crazy out there? Because as late as the 80s, on the official highlight reels, you still had words like fans and front and back nine being used. When did they really get freaky about the nomenclature out there?
Well, I did my first Masters in 1990. And, you know, you always had to be careful about what you said. Obviously, Danny McCoy found that out. But right about the time that I think Gary was reprimanded, things started to change. And it was the chairman of Augusta National really do set the tone for what happens in the tournament. And, you know, I remember Jack Stevens, who was just a terrific guy, and I thought a terrific chairman.
I like Jack.
He encouraged us, the announcers, the professional golfers who were announcers, to go out and putt our greens in the morning before the round so that we would have a good feeling of what the players would be facing. Up until then, it was verboten. You couldn't do it. But then all of a sudden, after Jack left, things started getting a lot more around the Hootie Johnson time. It started getting a lot more battened down, you know. They were really micromanaging everything. You had to say patrons. You couldn't even say stands. They were, I forget what they were.
But God, I learned that one.
Three words that I never said. I know that.
Yeah.
Patron, POS, that's what it was. Patron observatory stands.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, that's...
Okay, seats, whatever. I'm not going to say that. And so they got stuffier and stuffier and more elitist. You know, as the whole Martha Birch thing happened and whatever, they kind of dug in their heels. So they said, no, we're going to do things the way we want to do them, and we're going to do things on our timeline and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, it's a bit – you used to be able – there's footage of people running to from second shot to the green to be able to see a player hit the second shot and then putt out. You can't – if you even jog, Pinkerton's going to come and grab you and tell you, you know, there's no running at Augusta.
Yeah, I lived and worked in Augusta for 5.5 years in the late 90s, into the early 2000s, and I grew to love that tournament and that place. And I've played the course several times, covered it just like you. A couple of weekends ago was a huge empty space in my life. But I imagine your empty space was even greater because you actually got to be a part of it. You got to broadcast the Masters. And even though you wouldn't have done it this year, did you miss it as much as I, or am I placing my feelings onto you?
You know, I really wanted to do my 30th Masters in a row. And that was one of the things that that irritated me about the way CBS handled everything, and I'm not even going to get into that.
Yeah, we don't.
But I really wanted to do 30 Masters in a row. So, yeah, I missed it. It was kind of funny. I tweeted out during the week, you know, during these times, it's hard enough to figure out what day of the week it is without there being a Sunday of the Masters on every day.
That's true.
So it was difficult. It was kind of weird listening to yourself call the action on past tournaments. That was weird for sure. Because you know I don't really watch a lot of them
right
on replay, and you're there and you have your perspective when you're doing it live. But to sit back and observe what really was happening overall, from a, you know, without a producer screaming in your ear or something like that, that was weird.
What's a Masters in November going to look like?
Well, you're going to be a lot of sweaters.
Yeah.
November is going to be around, mid-50s, low-60s.
Yeah, you know, like I've told people, I said, look, I had some cold Novembers in Augusta. Once you get to Halloween, a freeze is always in play in the morning, and you could have, you know, days where your high is in the you know, mid-40s, and that would completely change the way, you know this, the way the golf ball reacts, how far it goes. Everything about it could change, and it could be a real interesting wrinkle for these guys.
I don't live there in November, but I got to think that the azaleas aren't blooming.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, someone asked me about that the other day, and I said, look, do you really think you're underestimating these guys? If you don't think they can find a way to get transplanted azaleas in there in November, you're kidding yourself. In fact, they may have azaleas draped over pumpkins just to pay homage to the season.
Well, you know what? I do know that going from the TV compound out to my hole, I have to drive by their hothouse that they have way back.
Oh, yeah.
In the back of the compound. And they got all kinds of plants there. And I remember one year we had a downpour of monumental proportions. I was on the 13th hole, which is called azalea. And all of the blooms, all the flowers were just wiped off because of the rain. And I come back the next morning, get in my tower, and then if they're not back on. Well, they have replanted a bunch of them overnight. So, yeah, they're able to do whatever they want to do. Let's face it. The Masters is everything that's great with golf, and on the other side of the coin, it's everything that's wrong with golf. You know, from the perfectly manicured, you know, excessively fast greens, you know, kind of antiquated behavior, social behavior acceptance, you know.
No,
that's the stuff that's not good for golf. That's, you know, greens chairman at certain clubs look at Augusta and they go, I want my golf course to look like that. And so the budget has to go up. The whole thing has to change just because they're trying to copy Augusta.
No, I am so there with you. I have argued this forever living in the southeastern United States that Augusta National is responsible for more economic trouble at golf courses than they could ever be given credit for. Because what people don't realize, or the vast majority don't realize, is Augusta National is closed from May 30th to October 15th every year. It's hotter and humid. It feels like my hometown of Houston in the summertime in Augusta. It's so hot and humid. And you know what hates hot and humid? Bent grass. And all of these people that in the southeast United States says, well, we're going to get bent grass greens just like Augusta National. Well, you know what? You can make a pretty good facsimile from about November to March, but then after that, your greens are just terrible. They are awful, and everybody does nothing but complain, and that's why I've seen golf courses by the hundreds in the last couple of years switch back over to Bermuda grass, and it's like, duh, you should have thought of that to start with.
Yeah, if you go back and look at the old films of the old tournaments, the golf course was a lot more rustic. I think Augusta National could do the golf world a favor if they just backed off a little bit of their pristine, you know, spend $40 million of a golf course budget and showed some brown grass, you know, slowed things up a little bit and those kinds of things so that the rest of the world would find that to be acceptable. You know, right now, if you want to be a championship golf course, you got to try and have it in Augusta National condition, which is completely preposterous.
He is legendary swing coach and broadcaster Peter Costas. And up next, this is what would have been Wells Fargo Championship Week here at Quail Hollow Club. We'll give you a taste of defending champ Max Homa's teleconference with the media that went down earlier this week and take dead aim at the present and future of the tournament with tournament director Gary Soba, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. On the calendar, prior to the coronavirus pandemic, this was to be Wells Fargo Championship Week out at Quail Hollow. Defending champion Max Homa held a teleconference with the media on Tuesday. Wanted to give you a little taste of that. Max, obviously you can't be here defending your title, but when you think back a year ago, winning your very first tournament here, the Wells Fargo Championship, what goes through your mind?
That's a great question. I guess the first thing that comes to mind was just like the walk up 18 and how electric it was, how fun it was, how I don't know, it really felt like a dream coming true. And then, you know, in real time, that's obviously very rare. I've always loved the city, the golf course, and all the people. And it's a bummer that we can't go back. Obviously went out and did my media day a couple months ago, and you could tell everybody was excited. I was excited. So it was a real stream, but what an awesome week for me and obviously a life-changing Sunday.
You mentioned media day last month. You and I had lunch that day, talked a good deal, both on mic and off mic, and never once did words like coronavirus, COVID-19, and pandemic come up. You were on your way the next day to Orlando for the Arnold Palmer, and within a week and a half, we went from, you know, excitement about the Arnold Palmer and excitement about the upcoming Wells Fargo to the world was shut down. Was there any talk in Orlando at that point of something looming, or did it not start until that next week when you got to the TPC?
Yeah, no, we had, you know, heard it was looming, I guess would be a word we could use. And, yeah, so we had just gotten a letter basically saying, you know, maybe use your own Sharpie. If you're going to be signing autographs, don't be, you know, sharing with the fans. So, obviously, you know, it sounded like it was, you know, more serious than I guess I knew the week prior. And then, yeah, when we got to the players, it obviously started to get a lot, you know, become a much bigger deal, or we would start to understand it a bit more, I guess. And then, yeah, I guess it was probably Wednesday of the players when the NBA shut down, I think. And then President Trump had his press conference about, you know, all the how serious it was. And that's when it really hit. But yeah, it all kind of felt like it sped up quite a bit between the Arnold Palmer and then the players.
You're listening to excerpts from Max Homa's press conference for the Wells Fargo Championship that took place earlier this week in conjunction with the PGA Tour. He was then asked to refer back to the electricity of walking up 18, knowing he's going to win the Wells Fargo Championship. And what sort of atmosphere, what sort of electricity would there be the first tournaments back with no fans there?
Yeah, you know, I've thought a lot about it. It will be weird. I imagine the person, you know, hopefully myself, but the first person to win a tournament, it's going to be probably the strangest win of their lives. But at the same time, it sounds very selfish of us to not want to play in front of fans because it won't be electric. People are really craving sports and craving entertainment, and I would play, you know, in front of nobody. I'd carry my bag if they needed me to in front of nobody. So I think that, you know, that's kind of my outlook on it. Obviously, if it's unsafe, we won't be doing any of that. But, I think every tournament other than, I know there was some talk about the Ryder Cup, and the Ryder Cup, obviously a big part of that is the fans in at the event, and that makes it kind of the Ryder Cup. But other than that event, we could easily make do, without the buzz and electricity. I think we would still feel the heat and feel the excitement, just knowing that we have a chance to win on the PGA Tour, whether, like I said, whether 12 people are watching us, zero people watching us, or, 1,000 people. So, it obviously would be odd, but I don't think, of all the things going on right now, I think that's the least of our worries.
Max, Daniel Rappaport from Golf Digest. I'm curious about what your personal comfort level is with returning to golf in a little over 40 days. Would you be comfortable traveling week to week to week? Are you waiting for, advancements in testing, like the tour has said they're anticipating, or what's your current comfort level on returning to the tour?
Yeah, so I kind of liken this question, because we get this a lot right now just from family and whatnot. I liken this question to like me asking you what your favorite thing to watch right now is, but in 2 months from now. So it could change. I know that the tour is going to do their absolute best, and they are doing their best to make sure that we're going to come back at the right time and when it's safe. And I think that there's a date in place, June 11th, and I think that there's a lot that could change between now and then. I live in Arizona, where it's not nearly as chaotic, I guess, as California or New York. So I'm just watching the news. I'm keeping keeping tabs with what's going on, and I'm trusting in the PGA Tour to do the right thing, and I know that they will. It's hard for me to say that I feel ready or not ready, considering it's still quite a ways out. I imagine things will change, hopefully for the better. If not, I assume that we will not be going. I guess it just kind of depends. I don't know nearly as much as the heads of the PGA Tour, obviously the heads of the CDC and the government and these state officials. So I'm just I'm just kind of following their lead and hoping to learn more about this before we go back out.
You're listening to excerpts from Max Homa's press conference for the Wells Fargo Championship, done earlier this week in conjunction with the PGA Tour on Taking Dead Aim.
Max, this is Bob Herrick from ESPN. Is there any minimum that you want to see in place before you would go, whether it's testing or whether it's, various rules that would need to be put in place that we're not used to seeing in a professional golf tournament, anything like that sort of at this point bothers you and know that would be an assurance for you?
No, I don't think I need an assurance. I think if the PGA Tour, whatever the PGA Tour decides to do, I know has been well thought out and something that, considerably more more well thought out than something that I would have come up with, or at least it has more there's probably more research done. I'm going to trust what they have to do. Obviously I would say the travel will be the first thing, just to make sure that that's safe, but I don't necessarily need an assurance, I guess. But like I said, this is I'm assuming things will change quite a bit from whatever today's date is to June 8th when I would be leaving to go to Fort Worth. So, I guess obviously you could check back in then. But at this moment, I'm not really thinking about assurances or anything. I'm just hoping that things continue to progress a little bit. I know that everyone's been doing a great job.
Max, can you describe your setup there at the house as far as training, and how much actual golf have you been playing?
Yeah, it's super. My backyard is super sophisticated. It's a big green mat. You've probably seen them at a golf course. And then I have a big orange and black net with pink and white foam golf balls. And it's it's pretty amazing. I think it looks just like Tiger Woods' backyard. I practice back here quite often. Hard to see where the ball actually goes, but I have a good feeling they're all really straight and really high and look like Rory McIlroy shots. But I have been playing golf quite often. I play every Monday and usually a couple more days after that. I like to go hit balls and chip at the local golf courses around here just to get out of the house. Now that we have a date, I've been trying to get back into it a little bit slowly. But yeah, just, you know, kind of, it's obviously been a little, quite a bit less than normal, you know, but nothing crazy here. We've been quite fortunate in the Phoenix area in Arizona to be able to do everything as long as we follow the you know, restrictions and the guidelines, which we have.
You brought up the guidelines that you've been playing golf under in Arizona, and all of us that have been playing golf here, you know, it's been unique. No rakes in the bunkers. I know we have pool noodles at the base of holes. Has the PGA Tour reached out to you guys with some possible guidelines that when the tour returns, you might be playing under? We're not expecting pool noodles, but will there be one person who's a designated raker of bunkers, one person who is assigned to each hole who's a designated flag bearer, for lack of a better word, who takes the pin out, puts the pin in, retrieves the balls? Has there been any speculation or about the guidelines you guys will go back to face?
No, yeah, I haven't gotten anything. So I think, again, they'll probably make that decision as we get closer. We still have quite a bit of time. But, yeah, I haven't gotten any email about guidelines or anything like that.
Hey, Max, this is Rex Hoggard with the Golf Channel. Along those lines, what do you think it would be like if they decide not to let you have caddies during competition?
I mean, it would stink, but I guess we'd all finally have to blame ourselves for being you know, unfair. I mean, like I said before, it's not like I'm not going to play, but, yeah, it would be weird. But also, you know, I play golf without Joe carrying my bag when I'm at home, so I think we could handle it. I'm hoping that they don't make us carry the staff bag, because that would get a little bit difficult. But at this point, I would carry two staff bags to play some golf in a tournament if things could just go back to normal. So, yeah, it'd be odd. But, you know, like I said, who knows? They still got some time to figure out what we need to do. But maybe I'll just have Joe, I'll put a little earpiece in my ear and have Joe just follow along or something on the shot tracker.
That's 2019 Wells Fargo Championship winner Max Homa, and we're joined now by Tournament Director Gary Soba. Gary, I got to be honest with you. The last time I was with you was Media Day at Quail Hollow, the Monday before the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Everything was hunky-dory. There was not one word of pandemic, coronavirus, COVID-19. None of these were in our lexicon or nomenclature at this moment, to be honest with you. We had a great day. I defended my Media Day title. I had another trophy I was looking forward to. And then all of a sudden, within a week and a half, the rug's pulled out from under us. Not only is the PGA Tour season within the first few events canceled, but within a week or two, the Wells Fargo Championship is canceled. Lo and behold, here we are this week. Beautiful weather. I can't think of a thing I'd rather be than out at Quail Hollow Club with the Wells Fargo Championship.
Well, a couple things. First, congratulations. In fact, we made us name you the tournament champion, given the fact you defended your Media Day title.
You should go ahead and give me a locker in the champions locker room with Homa and Tiger Woods. That'd be nice.
I will tell Mr. Harris that.
Yeah, that'll fall on deaf ears real quick.
But you're right. The upheaval of the last 6 to 8 weeks has been, you know, massive. And as we talked about, the disappointment this week is certainly hitting. We certainly understand the decision by the PGA Tour, and there's more important things going on in the world right now than a golf tournament. But when the calendar hit this week, and this was our special event in Charlotte, and the weather is absolutely perfect, there's certainly a lot of disappointment, almost a melancholy feel of, my goodness, I wish we were playing golf out here.
I want to ask you this, because I was sort of surprised at what the PGA Tour wound up doing with sort of a revamp scheduled, and some events that were canceled all of a sudden appeared back on the schedule. And I'm speaking specifically of Harbortown and Memorial. It seems to me that the event we have, the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club, is one of the more prestigious non-major championship events on tour each year. I'm not being facetious in saying that. It's voted by the players as the best event they go to. Were we in the discussion for a reschedule? Was it something that Mr. Harris and the committee decided not to get involved with? Sort of get me in that process.
Well, there are a lot of variables that go into play into those equations, and one of the biggest variables is turf conditions. And as you know, we overseed with rye, and then it converts back to the Bermuda, you know, in June, July, and so forth. So we didn't get in depth in terms of conversations with the tour. I do know that, for instance, you mentioned specifically Hilton Head. Well, RBC happens to sponsor a couple events, and they cannibalized their Canadian event to go back and stay in the Hilton Head event. So, but turf conditions play a key component in that. Even if we could have played, if there was a weekend that did work, certainly the course converts here in the June-July time frame.
Gary Soba, tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, is our guest taking Dead Aim. One of the really sad thing, and maybe the saddest things about the cancellation of the Wells Fargo Championship, and it's something that I don't think is getting enough play with all of these tournaments canceled, is how much charitable dollar, how much charitable dollar is being lost to the local communities with the PGA Tour being absent. Just give people some idea locally how much money the Wells Fargo Championship has contributed over the years.
Throughout the 17 years, you're talking $23-ish million going back to local community, and we were on pace by all metrics to have a record year here. By that, I think we were probably looking at $2.5 million going back to local community. Now, we're still doing a lot of wonderful things this week, and we're going to give away nearly $500,000 to charity, and then Wells Fargo is going to also contribute dollars that are going to up that total to over, you know, $1.2 million. So there's some significant dollars, but compared to what was going to take place, there's no question that people get bruised, and those are the ones that you worry about, because the folks in need in the community, the people you want to help out.
How tough are those conversations? Do you call them, or do they call you?
Well, we go through, we probably have 200 charities that are very interested in receiving funds for us. So everybody really understands it. We have not had to have tough conversations yet, but in a couple of cases, we have talked to major charities that have received dollars in the past, saying not only this year may not be there, but the fact we go to Washington, D.C. next year makes this a two-year miss. And, you know, it's just difficult. You know, you want to be able to support all the charities, but certainly things that are beyond our control have impacted that.
Gary Soba is the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship. This is supposed to be our week, dang it! He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Thank you for bringing up next year and heading up to Avenel with the planned President's Cup. I want to play What If for a second. And I know every time I play What If with you, I already know the answer I'm going to get, but I have to ask anyway. The Ryder Cup, as of right now, is still on the schedule. There is talk of without fans, which is a distinct possibility, of postponing the Ryder Cup a year, similar to what they did in 2001 because of 9/11. They postponed it, and that's why we're on even number years with the Ryder Cup. Should that happen, should they postpone a year, would the Wells Fargo Championship revert back to Quail Hollow Club next year on the schedule, and then go to Avenel the year after that, as the President's Cup would be bumped back a year on the rota?
Well, as of today, as of this point, no conversations have ever been discussed surrounding that subject. So I think that is, I'm not going to say slim and none, but I can tell you to this point, there has been no discussions, one of a delay or of the Ryder Cup, and if it did, how it would impact any specific tournaments, including ours.
I knew you were going to give me that answer, but I had to ask, right?
Doing your job, Charlie. And we appreciate all the help you provide the tournament. Wish you were out here right now.
Is the PGA Tour on site yet, or someone representative of them on site yet, making plans for the President's Cup next year? Or because I remember when we had the PGA Championship, the PGA of America was on site, it seemed like 2 years in advance.
They do have a team here. Adam Sperling, who's the tournament director, has been here nearly 2 years already, I believe, and still has a year and a half before the tournament. And they've got a sales staff led by Kyle Cadell here in the marketplace. So they do have those, and it's amazing. When he started 3.5 years, well, that goes by really, really quickly. And now we're already down to, I guess, less than a year and a half, because that will be late September, early October.
Is that weird to have two simultaneous tournaments basically being planned at the same time by separate entities?
We work well together, so weird. You know, we kind of run our events and they run ours. There's not much overlap. Again, there may be some confusion in the marketplace, but the annual golf, the May tradition of the Wells Fargo Championship is just something I think people just have on their calendar. So that first week of May, after 17 years, people are so accustomed to this event that I think the weirdness is they can't come out and enjoy it this year.
Well, it's the single biggest event that the town and the area, I'll even say the state has. I mean, 6 days of stacking them deep and selling them cheap in there. I mean, we've got a ton of people that go through the gates at Quail Hollow Club for the Wells Fargo Championship every year. There's no event in the state that even comes close to rivaling that.
There's really not. There may be, you know,
maybe a state fair, maybe because it goes on longer, but
yeah, maybe the NASCAR week does well as well. But we're talking over a couple hundred thousand people come out here through the course of the week, and you know, it's just such a beautiful place. I call it therapy to be able to come out to Quail Hollow and be able to watch the finest in the world. And we were going to have a great, great, great field this year, as we always do. But I've been told by so many media folks it's their favorite event of the year.
That's Wells Fargo Championship Tournament Director Gary Soba. Also want to thank 2019 winner Max Homa and the great Peter Costas, swing instructor and czar for many years on CBS of the Konica Minolta Swing Vision, for their time and insight this week. I want to remind you to keep up with us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Give us a like. Featured there now, links to articles on the latest goings on in and around the game. You've said it before, I'll say it again. In these times, golf may be the best way to get out, get some good exercise, get plenty of the ultraviolets, the vitamin D, while being able to practice safe distancing, and for gosh sakes, wash your hands all the time. So if you're able to get out, do it. Tee it up. Enjoy letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here very soon. Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.